Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Kevin Walsh here, The Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast, back after week two of the NFL season is now in the books. We had a doubleheader on Monday night. We'll start there, but of course, throughout this show, we will get to the Eagles and the Chiefs, with the Super Bowl rematch, I think giving us a lot to actually sink our teeth into. My Super Bowl pick, speaking of Super Bowl, their quarterback is maybe out for the season. It's possible. Joe Burrow with the turf toe. Could be out for the year, is out at least 3 months. What's the pivot? Carson Wentz is back, and I am going to talk Thursday Night Football just a little bit because I am very, very excited for Thursday Night Football, and I'll explain why. Look, we had four teams in action on Monday because we had a doubleheader, and we can do this somewhat quickly, right? A little anecdote on each of those teams. Tampa Bay wins the first game 20-19. Baker Mayfield is in the MVP conversation, okay? So that is the appropriate, not Baker Mayfield might be in it. No, okay? Unless you're telling me the conversation is too deep and it's just Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, which is an argument you could try and make, but if that's the one you want to make, we could have that argument. But Baker Mayfield is top six in odds right now to win a league MVP. Sitting at 20-1 on one book, that is accurate. Baker last season did have MVP numbers. I remember going through this in the preseason research, but guys to be top 10 in passer rating QBR and have 40-plus total touchdowns last year was Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield. Baker now with two big-time comebacks in the fourth quarter to start this season. It's a dangerous way for the Bucs to live. Because you don't want to, for this team to be 2-0 at a point differential of +4, right? It's not a dominant start, but for Tampa Bay, it's about stacking wins. And for Baker to really make inroads in the race, it's important for Tampa to stack wins. You know, I mentioned yesterday his MVP candidacy and someone had pushed back like, whoa, what about, like, why wouldn't he have been in it last year? They won the division. Winning the division is not the bar. The league MVP in the last decade or so has been about, and I'll pull up the exact list here, okay, has been about being the number one seed and the quarterback of that football team. That's really what it comes down to. Josh Allen somewhat bucked that trend last year, okay, where he was the two seed. But that was possibly and probably the difference between him and Lamar winning it, all in all. But if you look, 2013, Peyton Manning and his Denver Broncos. 2014, Rodgers and the Packers. 15, Cam Newton, right? They were the one seed in the NFC. So was Matt Ryan, Tom Brady in the AFC. Mahomes, Lamar, Rodgers, Mahomes, Lamar. These guys were the one seed. Josh last year was the two seed. So for Baker Mayfield, again, in the conversation, for Baker to really break down the door, the Bucs need to go out there and win at least 12 games. And if you look right now, they have an updated win total of 10.5 at -125 to the over. So Baker's in that conversation, undoubtedly, through two. For Houston, this is the price you pay for punting on offensive line before a season starts. And I understand you can only do so much, right, where you're, you know, trying to pour resources into certain areas. But if I look at this Texans team, and they have a great defense, offensively, they're things should be mostly cheap. Nico Collins isn't like the highest paid receiver in football. CJ Stroud is on a rookie deal. The running back room is bad. I mean, you're paying Joe Mixon more than you'd want, especially considering he doesn't play. But, you know, this team overpaying like a Dalton Schultz, this team probably still being on the hook somewhat for Laremy Tunzel as he plays for the Commanders. Those are tough breaks for Houston. But so are the breaks. And the reality for this Texans team is one of the reasons I was, you know, willing to fade them in the South. As someone who picked Jacksonville and legitimately would have picked Indianapolis if Anthony Richardson was their starting quarterback. And we can laugh and joke about that. You know, we'll see if Daniel Jones can prove me wrong for a full season. But I thought there was a lot of upside, you know, 2 through 53 coaching staff. Outside of the quarterback position, there was some pop there for that football team, and they're living up to that. And they got enough pop to make Houston a very shaky divisional favorite. As they were. And the truth is, Jacksonville can bury this team next week. The Jags host the Texans, could push them down to 0-3. Jacksonville shoots up to 2-1. That's a big-time start. That is a big-time start, and it's an opportunity Jacksonville cannot squander. Look, that's the, like I said, I want to go quick through these, okay? Game number two, the Chargers beat up on the Raiders. Now, I was actually on the Raiders in this game, which may come as a surprise because I'm, you know, high on the Chargers coming into the year. I've actually mentioned they could be the number one seed in the AFC. I thought over a field goal, though, on the road was a little tall for the Chargers to be laying. Ultimately, though, what went wrong for Vegas is Geno Smith was atrocious. He was atrocious. And if you listen to this podcast, you may not be aware that there are people out there who think Geno Smith is a top 10 quarterback. There are multiple people out there who think Geno Smith is a top 10 quarterback. That is, of course, ridiculous. I am not telling you that Geno Smith is awful. He was awful in this game. He was terrible in this game. Geno Smith is capable of some good moments. He's capable of some good games. He had a good game in week one against New England, just kind of, I mean, throwing for 362 and completing over 70% of your passes, you'll take that. Absolutely, right? But Geno Smith has no chance to be an elite quarterback. And for the Vegas Raiders, they're going to be better, but they are not going to be good enough. And, you know, they were, in some places, a trendy playoff pick and a win on the road against New England in week one, you know, gave that a little life. And if they would have knocked off the Chargers here in week two, well, next week they might be playing a Marcus Mariota-led Washington Commanders. The Raiders hype train was ready to roll. Stopped dead in its tracks. Geno Smith was atrocious and the main culprit in that loss. Now, give the Chargers credit. The defense was balling. But this is a fascinating team to watch through two games because they are pass first. They are one of the most pass first teams in football. And I think sometimes it's jarring when anyone is actually like truly pass first in this league. But for a team who was expected to be a run first team to be this pass first like the Chargers are, it is a bit jarring. I think it's going to help them win a lot of games because Herbert is pushing the ball down the field and they're able to win in numbers, right? Because Ladd McConkey is, you know, a top, let's call it 16 receiver in football, right? Just to make it, you know, no arguments really across the board. Keenan Allen is a very, very reliable veteran, and we see the upside of Quentin Johnston. They're able to kind of win in bunches, if you will. He's got plenty to work with. It's why I was in on Herbert. And I think this team is going to be able to, again, have a very strong regular season, and that's going to lead to Herbert in that, you know, MVP conversation. Harbaugh's got a legit shot at Coach of the Year, and that was my pick before the season and my bet before the season, so I'll be rooting that in. It hurts the Amari and Hampton offensive Rookie of the Year chances because there aren't as many as anticipated, and the run blocking's not been very good for this football team, and he's a rookie, so the Chargers, who are all about winning, you know, there's some still push towards the veteran and Najee Harris, and, you know, it's going to be a push and pull here. I think by the end of the season, Hampton's the guy. I think through 2 weeks, right, and maybe through the first month and a half of the season, it could be a little up and down. Here's the biggest takeaway, though, from the way the Chargers are playing, and it kind of brings a smile to my face. It really does. Because you know, if you listen to this show, maybe you get it, but sometimes I don't think anybody really gets it. As the most unbiased man in the history of sports media, which I truly am, I have the ability to pick the Chargers to win the AFC West. Heavily consider the Chargers for a Super Bowl future. Say that the Chargers have a chance at the one seed in the AFC. Pick Harbaugh to win Coach of the Year. And acknowledge that I am backing a regular season version of this team. But at no point in these good Herbert games, and so far we have good Herbert games, right? Five touchdowns, hasn't thrown a pick, passer rating about a 128, QBR above an 80. He's scrambling well, right? Not turning it over. 72% of his passes completed. I'm able to watch this and say, yeah, I've seen Herbert be really good in the regular season. He was last year. And he's been better in through two games. Like, if he kept this up, but Herbert being good in the regular season, all good. It brings a smile to my face to know that if this is how the Chargers are going to play when we get to the playoffs, it's going to be on his arm again. Because for those of us who push back on Herbert coronation, it's about how awful the playoffs are. And then you get into September and October football, and the Herbert crowd acts as if someone like myself is unaware that he's going to have some good games. No, I know he is. And again, the most unbiased man in the history of sports media, I'm betting that he will. I had more faith in it than most of the Herbert guys. Right? There's a noted Herbert guy out there who barely put him in the playoffs. Wouldn't be willing to pick him to win the division. Right? So again, we'll do coronations. We'll do, right? Again, I'm betting on it. I'm more confident in it than you. But then the playoffs start, and let's see where the chips fall. He has the opportunity to erase it all this year, man. This division should be Justin Herbert's. The odds are out there. Plus 105. I'm sure there's probably one at least book out there flipped into a minus. It's the opportunity is there for Herbert. And they're going to be in the playoffs. What's the playoff price on the Chargers right now? Minus 400. Come on now. He'll be there. And that's when we see. That's where we find out. Someone whose career passer rating is a 97.1 and whose playoff passer rating through two games is a 60.7. We're going to find out. And I look forward to it. I really do. Because I'm in on your guy all regular season. And then the stuff that really matters when we're talking about the best starts. And we'll find out. So let's talk about the best. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs, a Super Bowl rematch. I entered this game so excited. And I'm not saying it was a pretty game, but it lived up in that it felt big. The whole game felt important. And it is a treat that through 2 weeks of the NFL season, there's been at least one game that you can point to and it feels massive, right? Of course, the week one Sunday nighter between Buffalo and Baltimore, and here week two, this Super Bowl rematch of the Chiefs and the Eagles. And I was so excited for this game, and I talked about it on prior episodes here, but just the fact that the Chiefs were entering into a game where it wasn't only a bit of a revenge because they were embarrassed in the Super Bowl by the Eagles, but it was also to not go 0-2. The stakes were great. I actually think it would have been far more boring if they were both 1-0. Because there were real stakes on it. And the Eagles won that football game. And with that, the Eagles fully and firmly, undeniably cement themselves as the team to beat. There is no team that can make an argument over the Philadelphia Eagles as the team to beat. There are teams who will be booked in front of Philly in the Super Bowl market. We're used to that. Okay, we know that how the books see Baltimore and Buffalo and eventually likely Green Bay. But the Philadelphia Eagles are on a ridiculous run of winning games. The only game they lost last year after a week five bye, Jalen Hurts was injured in the first quarter of the football game, and they lost by 3 to Washington. The last time the Eagles lost a football game that both Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown finished was in 2023. It's 2025, man. We're now weeks, plural, into the 2025 season. They have not lost a game they've both finished since 2023. So, for the Chiefs, because of all of their Super Bowls, a win here against Philly, they could have said, no, we're still top dog. No, that is the Philadelphia Eagles. They should likely still be booked as Super Bowl favorites, but when you factor money coming in, difficulty of repeat, it is what it is. But this is a group who leaves now two games against two decent to good teams, depending on who you are, right? Against Dallas and Kansas City. You can't find an analyst who says Philly's played well and they've won both of those football games. Because they are so good, they can win ugly. They can win with only a couple of elements of the football team clicking, right? Where in the Super Bowl, the whole team clicked and it was an absolute route burial blowout. On the road against Kansas City, the running game was all right. The defense was really good. Special teams made their hay with Jake Elliott being absolute nails from 50-plus multiple times. And that was enough for them to win that football game. And for Philadelphia, the schedule was much harder entering the season. I'll tell you guys this. You know, I didn't bet many NFL win totals. What I really only ended up doing was like an alt win total parlay of kind of my four favorites. That was the only way that I wanted to play it and invest and tie in that money. But one of the cleaner unders for me was Philly's 11.5. Just when I looked at the schedule and, you know, kind of balancing it out, Philly getting to 12 wins was going to be a lot. And you know, listen, if things go wrong, a sidestep there, you play the numbers kind of thing. Now, I didn't play that under, okay? In part, I didn't play that under because the Eagles' opening schedule, while there's elements of it that read difficult, right? Sometimes, you know, a tick up in familiarity with a football team can really help. And I never thought Philly would lose the opener to Dallas, even though I was on Dallas the whole way, right? Okay. Oh, a trip to Arrowhead week two. It's one of the first things I've talked about in the history of this podcast was the schedule release and the fact that the Chiefs were at a schedule, you know, a disadvantage, right, in that football game. And I thought they'd be able to get that one. So now what for Philly in their next six games? They have a week nine bye. Home against the Rams. They're 3.5-point favorites. At Tampa Bay. I'll be there in that game, actually, with my lovely fiance. I can't wait. That line will be, it depends on results a little bit. Like, Tampa could be and is projected to be 3-0, but that's probably not over a field goal. Okay, fine. Home against Denver. That's probably over a field goal. Bo Nix looks awful in year two so far. That's probably over. It's definitely over a field goal if the Rams game is. At the Giants, definitely over a field goal. Kansas City's up to a 6-point favorite now hosting the Giants. At the Vikings, might be Carson Wentz. We'll talk about it. But it's probably over a field goal. And then a week eight game hosting the Giants, which is over a field goal. Now, I'm not telling you the Eagles are going to be 8-0. I'm not telling you that. What I am telling you is the Eagles being 6-2 through the first 8 weeks, it feels like the floor. It feels like the floor. Who is listening to this telling me, however you're listening to this through the phone or, you know, on the computer, I don't know, through in the, you know, in the car, who's screaming going, no, that's 3-3. I see four losses. Who is? Take it. Next three games. Home against the Rams, at the Bucks, home against the Broncos. You've got multiple losses there. I don't know. I mean, you got to love the Rams to knock them off here in week three, I think, to have multiple losses. The Giants will be lucky to get one. They could. They'll be lucky to. Minnesota's a bit of a mess. All of this is relevant because you now know for sure that Philly is, again, there's no chance they're missing the playoffs, and they are definitively the team to beat. However, there are questions. As I said, they've won ugly. So for Philadelphia, the passing game, which is always the eye of the people, right? Jalen Hurts specifically, has not been what you'd hoped for. But I can't stress enough how bizarre the passing game has been. A lot of people feel as if, or a lot of people want these things to be about Jalen Hurts struggles, Jalen Hurts struggles. Well, the passing game to me is one of two things. And as always, it's probably a little bit of A, a little bit of B. But if you have to really, you know, pick, either Jalen Hurts is prioritizing not throwing interceptions over everything else. Jalen Hurts is back there in the pocket with time. Maybe a window's there, but absolutely not, because I might throw it over. And as long as we don't lose the turnover battle, we're going to win football games. And there's some validity, by the way, to that thought process, I actually believe. Because for Philadelphia, they're so good everywhere. You don't want to give teams short fields. But again, like, it would be jarring if Hurts is this unwilling to take chances, which says to me, option B, nobody's open. Nobody's open. Again, even if you're like, oh, come on, there's some windows there. At some point, you would think someone's going to be wide open. How many times have you seen Jalen Hurts complete a pass this year where the guy is wide open, down the field, right? I think he's only got, what, two passes of 10-plus air yards. One of them was the Devonta Smith side shot. And then I guess would be the other was the big-time Jahan Dotson play. Those are two plays where Hurts was willing to chuck it and give guys a chance. Spags was ripping off Engage 8 like this was Madden 2005. I know the play's still in the playbook, but in Madden, like 2005, 2006, that play worked a lot more effectively, I felt. But he's running Engage 8, and Hurts is like, okay, I'll just get rid of it. He's giving guys a chance, it felt like. Jalen Hurts, through two games, has the second best completion percentage in football at 75.6. Hear me? This isn't I'm about to give him massive praise. So Jared Goff is above him at 80.6, which is incredible, averaging 8.3 yards per attempt. Here are the guys who have played multiple games, completing over 70% of their passes, okay, and their yards per attempt number. Kyler Murray, 7.1. Matt Stafford, 8.8. Drake May, 7.5. Daniel Jones, 9.3. Herbert, 9.2. Tua, amazing, 7.8. The low mark we have is a Kyler 7.1. He's at 70.4 completion percentage. Hurts is at 5.6. That is unimaginable. I'll give it to you another way. Of the quarterbacks who have played multiple games who are averaging less than 6 yards per pass attempt, okay? Bo Nix is at 67.1% completion percentage. Every other quarterback is 65% or worse, which is 10.5 percentage points lower than Jalen Hurts. So, I am not saying Hurts is absolved of blame in this, but Jalen Hurts completing his passes this frequently, Jalen Hurts playing mistake-free football, it reads to me like there is either a situation where he's overvaluing playing mistake-free football, which is, I'm sure, is a little bit of the case, but more so, nobody's open. Which feels impossible when you have A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, It does, but that's what we're seeing right now for Philadelphia. And whether that's Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator, struggling within the concepts, whether that is A.J. Brown struggling to create some separation, Devonta Smith the same. It's a combination. It's a team game. There's 11 guys, right? So it's all going to work in unison. But the Philadelphia pass attack, okay, is always the thing to watch with the Eagles. But I don't know if people are realizing how weird it is. I think people are just like, Hurts. 101 passing yards. Knew it. Terrible. Jalen Hurts left a game where he had 15 complete. Again, he's averaging in that against the Chiefs, 6.7 yards a completion. A completion. That's bizarre. The only player who caught a pass of whose long reception was over 10 yards was Devonta Smith. It's very bizarre. And it's obviously something that we will be watching. We will also be watching the Kansas City Chiefs, as they are now the most interesting thing in the league. And the Chiefs are always a story, but the Chiefs being a story because they win a bunch of games while not playing good football is a boring story, or a frustrating one because people are having conversations about greatest of all time and accolades and yada, yada, yada while not evaluating the actual play on the field. Instead, now we have a bruised and battered champion trying to figure it out. And I think there's some optimism, and we'll get to that. But we have to acknowledge that Kansas City right now does feel in a very shaky spot. Because on the field, the Chiefs have three leaders. One of them is Patrick Mahomes. One of them is Travis Kelce. And one of them is Chris Jones. Let's start with Chris Jones. Chris Jones has now, at the end of each of the first two games, had a massive spotlight put on him, neither for good reason. At the end of the game against the Chargers, he was chewed out by Drew Tranquil because he didn't keep discipline on his pass rush, and Herbert then escaped the pocket and picked up the game-sealing first down. So Chris Jones, doing too much, is then all of a sudden again being barked at by one of ND's finest in Drew Tranquil. A wild situation that was, though, warranted clearly through watching the game. Then, Chris Jones goes viral because he tells Jalen Hurts, you don't even have 100 yards. He had 101, Chris, so, you know, check the math. That's all right. Telling, though, Hurts, you don't even have 100 yards. And Hurts telling him, we won the game, shut up. And that, to me, puts the Chiefs on the opposite of what they were on always, but especially last season. You'd leave games going, they didn't even play well. This guy missed the extra point. This guy missed the field goal. This guy fumbled the football. This bounced their way. This bounced their. They won the game. Shut up. Is what so many people wanted us to do around Chiefs conversations. This podcast did not exist during last year's season. If it did, we would have been having very different Chief talk than I think what you saw, again, across the sports media landscape. And a lot of stuff that came home to roost in that Super Bowl. But for Kansas City now, they're on the other side of it. You lost. But they didn't even have 100 yards. So what, Chris? And they ran for a .122. I don't understand. Are you? What's the story, Chris Jones? Is it the offense's fault? What do we want to do here? You don't have 100 yards. You don't have a sack. We're two games in. I'm just saying. You're sitting there, doggy style, trying to stop a tush push for two of the last three games, and you haven't been able to do it. So that's out of character. It's out of sorts. It reads poorly. Questionable moving forward. Travis Kelce, first ballot Hall of Famer. Not the same guy. and it's eating him alive. You can see it. You see it in the success more than the failures. Every time Travis Kelce picks up a big first down, he's going insane. And he should. I like that. Again, people who know me know. DeSean Jackson, one of my favorite players of all time. I love a showboat. Spike the ball, get hype, give me energy. But Travis Kelce is trying to not just will this team, he's trying to will himself into a place that he's not at. And that's tough. That's a tough reality. Remind yourself, Travis Kelce massively considered retirement this past season and is likely playing his last season. Gonna get married next year. You're gonna move on. That's what it's gonna be. So he's trying to will himself. And you see it in the success, and it's clear as day in the failures. The frustrations are there, and they've been there for Travis, right? He runs a little hot, but we're 2 weeks in. And it just feels like it's going to be a long, long season. A team who's missing Xavier Worthy and is missing Xavier Worthy, Travis Kelce feels responsible for that. It's a long, grinding, tough season to make it through. It really is. Questionable moving forward. And then there's Mahomes. And this is supposed to be the unquestioned part of this Chiefs team. Day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, we have Patrick Mahomes. But just like last year, all I ask is we hold Mahomes to the standard. If Patrick Mahomes has already cemented himself as one of the five best quarterbacks in league history, which I think he has, if Patrick Mahomes is still the best quarterback in this league, which I think he is, then please, let's hold him to the standard. Because through 2 weeks, it's everybody's fault but 15. Patrick Mahomes so far has been an excellent runner. Excellent. 123 yards, a touchdown in each game. 9.5 yards per rush attempt. It's been excellent what he's been able to do on the ground. Also out of character, though, to do this early in the regular season. Shows the pressure's on. Shows that things aren't okay. And Mahomes, I think, is already, you know, that week one, lower the shoulder. Yeah, I think he's already going to try and clean that up because then Mahomes is going to get cleaned out. You're asking for it. And this team cannot afford to lose 15 for any games. As a runner, he's been brilliant. What about as a passer? Is Patrick Mahomes' greatness tied to his ability as a runner or a passer? I understand that the running's a benefit, but come on, what's the story? The guy who threw 50 passing touchdowns his first year as a starter. We know what it is. 6.5 yards per completion. Completing less than 60% of his passes. Two passing touchdowns and an interception is how the year has started. And even some of the final numbers look much better in not what is garbage time, but you're playing more conservative defenses, if you will, sloppier defenses. Mahomes threw for 70 yards on that final drive against Philly, right? Broken coverage, hits a big pass down the field. He was never on the field again after that, which means with 4 minutes to go in the game, Mahomes had 117 passing yards. That's 16 more than Hurts finished with. All right? And everyone's attacking the Philly pass attack. What's the Mahomes story? Week one against the Chargers, threw for 64 yards on that final drive, which ultimately amounted to what? Cutting it to a one-score game. They never got the ball back. That means that he had 194 yards with 5 minutes to go. That's not good enough. We all know the Super Bowl. We all know the Super Bowl, how he, again, I'm not saying it was, he was out there to exclusively make his numbers look better, but the QBR of 10 in that game tells the story, not the 257 and three passing touchdowns, come on. Whole lot of garbage time, meaningless yardage. Mahomes has not been good enough. They've played two really good teams. They're 0-2. They're usually 2-0. You settle for 1-1. They were favored in the first game. They were home for the second game. They're 0-2. Yes, there are problems elsewhere. Missing Rashee Rice, missing Xavier Worthy. The ground game has not been effective outside of Mahomes running. But the story of the Kansas City Chiefs is not Isaiah Pacheco post-injury. It's not Rashee Rice's suspension. It's Mahomes. And there has to be adjustments made. This is where I say there is a glimmer of hope, though. It comes from Andy Reid and 15 getting together and realizing they need to be more aggressive from the jump. The Chiefs last year won games on... They consistently won despite not being impressive. And it seems as if they've still not learned a lesson that that isn't sustainable. And instead, they think it's their identity. The best way to win a football game, okay, is to dominate and put it away early. I'll go to an ugly game many of you likely didn't pay attention to. Arizona and Carolina. A 20-3 halftime game that was 27-3 with 9:20 to go. Out of nowhere ended up a 5-point game, Panthers with the football. But for Arizona, they put it away early. It was done. You're allowed to put games away early. Mahomes has now had a 49-yard completion on the final drive in each of the last two games. Hit it earlier. Call it earlier. Win on aggregate. Instead of starting your drive, bad pass over the middle, 2nd and 10 run for nothing, 3rd and 9, oh no. Deep shot. Deep shot. Deep shot. 1 of 3. Let Mahomes have a bad completion percentage. Let him win on average depth of target. Be aggressive down the field. Hollywood, we're running Hollywood Brown on mesh routes over the middle. Shoot him down the field, man. That's what he does. That's what he does. That's who he is. How about this? How about this? This Tyquan Thornton averaging 25 yards a reception. Shoot him down the field. That's what it is. When Worthy's back, do the same. That's what it's got to be. And it's what it wasn't last year or the year before that and right now. But the Chiefs can't just go, well, not much we can do right now. We'll talk to you when Worthy's back. We'll talk to you when Rice is back. It could be too late. Kansas City's next two games at the Giants, who showed some fight. Some fight. Against Dallas. And then they're going to be home on a Sunday night against Baltimore, where they will be home underdogs again. That's what's going to happen. And if this team is 1-3, 1-3 is going to feel a lot worse than 0-2, believe it or not. Believe it or not. And there are games you can point to on this schedule where they'll be fine against Vegas, and they'll be fine against, Houston's not as good, or, right? Like, I don't know. Jags look a bit better. Lions found some footing last week. Commanders week 8, Jaden Daniels probably available for that game. Cowboys on the road on Thanksgiving, tricky. Colts game now, maybe not a walkover. Chargers you still have looming. I'm just saying. You know, AFC West is supposed to be more competitive. You've lost one game. You have 5 left in that division. I'm not saying they're going to lose all 5 of them. I'm not saying that they're even going to lose. I'm not even saying that they're going to lose 3 of them. But if they go 4-2, that's still 2 more losses. So if they're 1-3 and there are 2 more division losses waiting for them, that's 5. There goes the 1 seed. That might be enough. There goes the division. We've never seen this team as a wild card team before. So, for Kansas City, not all hope is lost. And I'll tell you now, I'm fascinated to know what number we're going to get Chiefs at home against the Ravens. Because Baltimore, again, nobody gets booked like Baltimore. So I am, you know, I could see a world where I'm interested in KC, depending on the price. I can't imagine we touch three, but it's going to be, the Ravens will be favored. There's some hope. But Kansas City needs to look in the mirror, realize their passing game has not been good enough, and there is no excuse for that when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Let's take a quick podcast break here, talk some quarterback injuries, my goodness. Next, it's the Kevin Walsh Show.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
All right, let's get into it here, man. And this Joe Burrow injury is devastating. Now, if you're listening to this show and you have only seen the reporting from the, you know, Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter's, you might think, hey, look, the Joe Burrow stuff is, you know, it's tough, but he'll be back and it's going to be all right. I'm not sure Joe Burrow is going to be back. Pro Football Doc, Dr. David Chow, thinks that the three-month timeline is incredibly optimistic, and it's very on the board that Burrow misses the remainder of the season. Now, I will tell you guys this. I will talk to Doc at some point within the next 7 days. So, I'm going to push him for clarity on, when you say end of season, does that mean, like, regular season, mid-January, February, would he not be healthy until June? I want down-to-the-bone specifics from Doc on what he thinks that is. But, of course, it doesn't look great. Now, let's say they're right, and it's a three-month thing. And let's not be silly and suggest that that means 3 months to the day, because there's a December 14th game. This would leave the Cincinnati Bengals, my Super Bowl pick, with 3 weeks of regular season Burrow and then the playoffs. Now, the beauty for this football team is they're 2-0. And if Burrow needs to go 2-1 to end the season, then Cincinnati would need to go 6-6 over the next 12 weeks. And by the way, the final three games for Cincinnati are at Miami, home against Arizona, home against Cleveland. They could go 3-0, but I'm not going to put that out there right away, okay? 6-6, 500 football. Is it possible? Is it doable? The next four are tough. At Minnesota, at Denver, home against Detroit, at Green Bay. Let's say chalk holds, they only win one of those games. They would be 3-3 through six, okay? They are then home for a Thursday nighter against Pittsburgh, home against the New York Jets off a mini bye, and home against the Chicago Bears. Again, three straight home games, pretty good spots. But you don't want to be ridiculous. We're thinking Jake Browning's the quarterback. Let's say they go 2-1. I don't think that's unreasonable. Pittsburgh's a bit of a mess. Jets are a disaster. Bears, my goodness. Let's say they go 2-1. They would be sitting 5-4 through 9 weeks going into their bye. Off the bye, okay, the next five games at Pittsburgh, home against New England, at Baltimore, at Buffalo, home against Baltimore. Are there three wins there? It doesn't sound like it. It doesn't sound like it. Are there two wins there? You would think so. You'd like to think so. If there were two wins there, they'd be 7-7. And I did that. I wanted to do that on air with everybody on the podcast. So if Burrow is back and they're 7-7, you would think 10 wins absolutely gets you into the playoffs. Burrow might have to run the table. If not, you hope 9-8 gets you in. Tiebreakers go your way and 2-1 gets you in. Here's the deal, though. If you're Cincinnati, let's just say Burrow's not actually ready week 16 or 17 or 18, but he'll be ready for a wild card game. You have to be honest with yourself. And your quarterback room cannot be Jake Browning and Sean Clifford and Mike White and all this nonsense they are picking up. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, now, if you know Burrow is done for the year in that room, then none of this matters because you're not going to be a Super Bowl team. But if you can get Burrow back out there on the field at any point, you're a Super Bowl team. They were my pick, and I feel vindicated through two games. The defense has stepped up. There's a bit of mojo around this team. I think Jacksonville collapsed. I'm not saying they didn't. But for Cincinnati, okay, to pull off that comeback, down 10 in the fourth quarter. No, not down 10 in the fourth quarter. Excuse me. But down a touchdown with Burrow out. Why did I say down 10 in the fourth quarter? It was a close game. But to pull off that comeback, Browning throw three picks, it just feels a little different. And you paid for a Super Bowl roster. Hendrickson, Chase, Higgins, of course, Burrow. You have to give yourself a chance. Kirk Cousins is the most obvious choice. Do I think Kirk Cousins could play 500 football with this Cincinnati roster? Yes. You guys know I like the Cincinnati roster. It's why they were my Super Bowl pick. So for some people who would say no, I say yes. Kirk Cousins, I'm sure, would be elated for this opportunity. Elated for this chance. Because he's just backing up Michael Penix right now. What does that do him? I don't know. Maybe some money gets tossed aside. That phone call has to be made. The other phone call is to the Giants and Russell Wilson. Because if you are the Giants after week one, it felt like you may only have one more week of Russ being your quarterback. And then you go out there and watch him throw for 450 yards and three passing touchdowns. But you lost. So the Jackson Dart clock continues to tick. And that's what's going to decide everybody's job in New York anyway. What if you could get a third rounder for Russell Wilson? That might sound rich. I don't know if it is, though, off a 450 passing game. And if you're Cincinnati with your wide receivers, you don't take that chance? Whichever's cheaper, probably. But Kirk last year obviously was a mess. At least you just watched Russ light it up. Heck, Russ lit it up last year against Cincinnati as a Pittsburgh Steeler. Russell Wilson last year against Cincinnati had a game where he threw for 414 and three passing touchdowns. So, you know, they've seen it firsthand. It's still in there somewhere. And you're looking for Russ to go 500, right? Mostly what he did with Pittsburgh when he took over. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Went 6-5. 6-6 if you had the playoff game. You're looking for 500. Because you're 2-0, it's giving you some runway. I've not ripped up my Cincinnati Super Bowl tickets. Because as I said, if Burrow is in the playoffs as a wild card or whatever, I'm fine with it. So we wait and see, could he potentially come back? But I will grow less and less optimistic the more this team runs out Jake Browning, as opposed to making a legitimate move for either Russell Wilson or Kirk Cousins. Speaking, though, of Jake Browning, Next week, he's on the road against the Minnesota Vikings and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, one of the biggest soft spots for me in football. Eagle quarterback who was absolutely on his way to winning league MVP. Tears his ACL in LA against the Rams, threw a touchdown pass on that torn ACL. His MVP-level season had Philly in such a good position that they were able to be the one seed into the NFC playoffs, and the Eagles win the Super Bowl that year. And Wentz, unfortunately, was not able to fully figure it out in Philadelphia. Hurts took over. He was forced out of Indianapolis too soon. He threw 27 touchdown passes to 7 interceptions that year. Washington, he just couldn't last. And then it's been backing up in LA and Kansas City over the last two seasons. But Wentz is a guy that, hey, listen, man, if we're still allowed to hold out hope for Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones and Geno Smith and all these other guys that we hold out hope for, Justin Fields, then I'm going to hold out hope for Carson Wentz. I am, because I've seen good football in him. And now he's in Kevin O'Connell's system. Ooh. Ooh. How did we get here? Well, J.J. McCarthy has a high ankle sprain. That, for me, feels a little reminiscent of when a pitcher is struggling in Major League Baseball and is tossed on the IL. J.J. McCarthy looks terrible. The fourth quarter against the Bears probably saved it from being, you know, one of the worst two-week starts to an NFL career we've ever seen. He looks terrible. And in comes Carson Wentz. And I believe J.J. McCarthy looked so bad. They said 2 to 4 weeks for J.J. That if Carson Wentz goes 3-1, let's say he misses the max, misses 4 weeks, okay? Or four games. If he goes 3-1, I think Wentz keeps the job until he gives it away. And I will tell you this right now. If I am to be beaten down and, you know, without a Super Bowl future truly, because Cincinnati's a mess, I will, of course, want to make a smart investment into the Super Bowl market as, you know, we try and figure this out. But the Vikings are calling my name. Because honestly, they're 60-1. On one book, they're 33-1. And I'll take a chance on Kevin O'Connell and Carson Wentz. It's 60-1. If I'm already down the Bengals bags, if I'm already beat on those, who are at the same number, by the way, I'll be interested in Minnesota. The Vikings-Bengals game is one of my most anticipated of Week 3. My most anticipated game, perhaps, of Week 3. I'm just going to do this quickly and then I'll get you out of here. Appreciate you listening. Again, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. It does help out the show. 5 stars, man. Feel free to follow us over on Twitter as well, at TheKevinWalsh. I'm just telling you this right now. Thursday Night Football, I'm betting the Miami Dolphins. I've, started a part of my, like, in-between Sunday, 4 o'clock ending, Sunday Night Football, pull up the NFL schedule without the odds, you know, and just try and guess the line, what I think the books are going to do, what it should be. Like, there's a blend of it all. And you knew Buffalo would be a big favorite. I said to myself, over 7, you know, I'll be interested in a little Miami dip. If this is at 10, I'll probably have to sprint. When I saw this at 12.5, my jaw hit the floor. I could not believe that Buffalo was a 12.5-point favorite to the Miami Dolphins. The Baltimore Ravens were just a 12.5-point favorite to the Cleveland Browns. Baltimore is booked as better than Buffalo. Everyone knows that because they were just favorites in Buffalo. I understand that Miami is a, you know, is terrible vibes and Tua's making bad decisions. I get you. They're not worse than the Cleveland Browns. That's ridiculous. 12.5 points. That's ridiculous. I can't wait. I cannot wait. It's one of these rare spots where you get double digits in the NFL and you're like, I know what I want to do. It's the equivalent of getting 4+ touchdowns in college, right? Like, you know, when you're betting it, it's there's a bit of comedy to it. And you guys, like, I can't always tell you what I'm going to do for the Thursday night or on a Tuesday show. I know what I'm doing. And I'm fine with it. However this goes, they lose this game by 1,000. Last year, Buffalo in week 2 played Miami on a Thursday night, albeit in Miami. They won that football game 31-10, followed it up with a primetime Monday nighter against the Jags 47-10. Maybe this is going to be ugly. Don't care. Can't wait. Miami, +12.5. We will see you at the window. Again, folks, it's the Kevin Wall Show. Do me a favor. Rate, review, subscribe. Help us out here. Drop those 5 stars. Leave a little review. Get in the mix with us. Follow me over on Twitter at the Kevin Walls to keep up to date with everything we've got going on. Game time decisions Monday through Friday. Pro Football Today's on Sundays and all that good stuff. I'll be back here on this feed on Friday. I don't see any reason why not. We'll do the college football card and set you up for some of the NFL weekend stuff as well. Appreciate it. Kevin Walsh, The Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.